strike Iran while it was down, while it was weak. The way that the Israeli prime minister, and certainly this is true, describe Iran today is probably at its weakest point from a security and defense perspective, from the perspective of its proxies, and from an economic and internal domestic perspective as well. So the idea here for those who are pushing for war with Iran was that it was now or never. It was really the right time to do so. Now, Amy, that doesn't mean that there was an imminent threat from Iran to the United States, which is what the U.S. needs to have a proper legal basis for this war. Intelligence assessments do not agree with the president's characterization that Iran was about to strike first. And I can tell you, having worked at the Pentagon, that it is ludicrous to expect the American people to believe that Iran would have attacked the U.S. preemptively in the middle of negotiations, especially when, as you said, according to the Omani foreign minister who was mediating, that Iran was actually trying to make some kind of progress in these talks. And I think lastly, it's just important to separate two things here, which can be true at the same time. One is that this Iranian regime was a brutal, oppressive regime. And second, that it is not a legal justification to go to war to have the president talk about his feeling that Iran was going to strike. And we have seen the administration every day since then retroactively try to provide a series of justifications and objectives for this war. And the fact that they're doing so now, after the fact, tells you a lot about how little they were really thinking this through before they actually went to war.
Halararit, you're an 18-year career diplomat. You resigned over the U.S.'s Gaza policy under President Biden, the first diplomat to publicly resign over the U.S. support for the Israeli assault on Gaza. If you can talk about the through line from there to here, while you say that you were shocked Saturday morning, you weren't actually surprised, and what this means in terms of a wider conflict, the massive Israeli assault right now on Lebanon, with tens of thousands of Lebanese fleeing, Syrian refugees who've lived in Lebanon now crossing back over the border into Syria, terrified about what's happening in Lebanon. Take it from there.
Absolutely. No, I was horrified by what was happening, but I was not at all surprised. This is what I was warning against. This is what multiple diplomats were warning against and what we were working and trying to avoid. Now, if you rewind back to 2023 and 2024, you'll remember that there was a lot of activity even then with the Iranians. Israel attacked Iran and killed Iranian commanders in Syria. Three service members in Jordan were killed as well by an Iranian-backed group. All of this was a lead-up that was dragging the United States into a direct conflict with Iran. And as an American diplomat, my role was to protect and defend the United States of America. And so our warnings were, pull back, pull back. But Netanyahu obviously had other plans. Now, we insisted that U.S. law would actually be followed, meaning you cannot continue to surge unconditional weapons to the state of Israel. We knew, and we were documenting, and I even reported this to Congress after my resignation, that these weapons were not being stockpiled by Israel. The weapons that we were sending to Israel were not only being used for the genocide in Gaza, but that they were going to be used for a regional conflict with Iran, which would have the proportions to bring down really the entire region. I don't think we can underestimate what is actually happening now. So for Netanyahu, there is not two policies. It is not Gaza, West Bank, Lebanon. It is one and the same. For the state of Israel, sorry, go on.
I wanted to go to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, saying it's been inundated with over 200 calls from members of the U.S. military regarding religious comments made by U.S. commanders about the war in Iran. One combat unit commander reportedly said the war is, quote, part of God's divine plan, and that, quote, President Trump's been anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark his return to Earth, unquote. Last month, Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, or as Trump calls him, the war secretary, invited the controversial Christian nationalist pastor Doug Wilson to lead the Pentagon's prayer service. Wilson has opposed Muslims holding public office, does not believe women should be allowed to vote. Jasmine El-Gamal, you're a former Pentagon official. Your response to how this is being framed and the danger of this, what's seen as a Christian crusade by some?
Look, I mean, obviously, it's horrifying to hear those remarks. And there certainly has been in this second Trump administration that surge of Christian nationalism, of Christian Zionism into U.S. policymaking when it comes to the Middle East. And it is absolutely horrifying because it means that we are sending American soldiers, U.S., using American taxpayer money to a region that has been ravaged over the years by successive ill-thought-out U.S. interventions. The human cost of America's wars in the Middle East has been devastating. In just the last 5 days, as you mentioned earlier, almost 1,200 people killed and injured. Tens of thousands displaced. The human cost is not something to be taken lightly here. And the recklessness and the callousness of these decisions that are being made by a handful of men, essentially, that are upending the region, you know, and the global economy as well, especially if it continues much further, is extremely irresponsible.
Jasmine El-Gamal, we're going to have to leave it there. Former Middle East advisor at the Pentagon under President Obama. Hala Rerit is an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over Gaza under Biden, has now moved with her family to Oman because of the escalating war. Next, we speak with the first woman filmmaker to be nominated for both a short and feature documentary for this year's Oscars. We'll also, on this fourth anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, speak with Craig Renaud, the filmmaker who made a film Oscar nominated about his brother Brent on this fourth anniversary of the Russian invasion. Stay with us. The Hidden Light by Samuel Safa. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to a conversation with Geeta Gundabeard. She's an Emmy-winning, acclaimed Indian-American documentary filmmaker, director, producer, and editor. Recently made history as the first woman to receive Academy Award nominations for both Best Documentary Feature and Best Documentary Short in the same year. The short documentary, The Devil is Busy, chronicles a day on the front lines in the battle for reproductive rights at a women's health care clinic in Atlanta, Georgia. It is streaming on HBO Max. Her feature documentary, The Perfect Neighbors, nominated for Best Documentary Feature, available on Netflix. The film looks at the case of Ajika Owens, a 35-year-old black mother of four, fatally shot in 2023 by her white neighbor, Susan Lawrence, raising further scrutiny of Florida's so-called Stand Your Ground law, which Lawrence researched before shooting A.J. Owens. Lawrence is presently serving 25 years in prison after a jury convicted her of manslaughter. The film is constructed almost entirely from police body cam footage as police are called repeatedly to the neighborhood in the lead up to the shooting. This is the trailer for The Perfect Neighbor.
911 status of the emergency.
Are you having problems with the neighbor's children?
Hello, sheriff's office. Were any of you guys over here messing with this lady?
No, no.
We won't play football.
Sheriff's office.
I called because the kids from across the street. They shouldn't be screaming and running around.
Okay.
All the kids like to play. Sheriff said they can't walk or even throw their football over here.
911, what is the address of the emergency?
Several kids out there right now are screaming, yelling.
9 times out of 10, that lady over there probably called.
Oh, I know.
It's like the kids.
She thinks we're trying to steal her truck.
Do you even know how to drive?
The police says no trespassing. I'm not always walking the road.
There doesn't need to be a call for service every time a kid's playing in the yard.
She's always messing with people's kids.
Sheriff's office!
1 minute!
What is the address emergency?
My neighbor has been screaming outside.
She started banging on her door.
Pounding on it. Let me in. And then... bang!
Okay, so on fire. I don't bug anybody.
Come outside with your hands up!
I've barely ever seen it. I'm like the perfect neighbor.
The trailer for The Perfect Neighbor. I sat down with the film's director, Geeta Gundabir. I started by asking her how she came to this project.
This is a project that myself and my team at Message Pictures, we didn't go looking for it. It came to us. And the reason that it did was because Ajika Owens was a friend of my family. She was very close to some family that I have living in Florida. And so on the night that she was murdered, we got a distress call from my family, and we immediately sprung into action. And when I say we, I mean myself, my husband, who's also a producer on the film, Nikon Kwantu, and Message Pictures, my team, Alisa Payne and Sam Pollard. And we were immediately on the ground trying to support the family, and we became media liaisons for them, trying to get news coverage of the case, because we know without news coverage, unfortunately, gun violence is so common that cases like Ajika's can get swept under the rug. So that's how we got involved.
Now, before Susan Lawrence kills Ajika, also known as AJ, I want to go to several clips from the film of witnesses describing an incident with her. This is an incident with Susan Lawrence, the white woman who killed AJ, in which Susan waves a gun at the children in the neighborhood.
Another day happened that my friend told me that lady over there showed the kids that she had a gun.
We were just playing over there, and then she was waving her gun, and Isaac and all of them were like, run, and we were hiding behind this car right here.
And every time the basketball would go up there, I would be on my P's and Q's, like, because I ain't trying to get shot just for going up on her driveway.
Maybe like 2 days before that.
About 2 days before she showed this gun?
Yes.
Witnesses repeatedly described Susan Lawrence's racist and aggressive behavior toward the predominantly black children living in the neighborhood, including referring to them as slaves. This is another clip from The Perfect Neighbor.
Susan, she would come out and scream, and the language around these little kids.
That Susan with you?
Yeah. Oh.
Describe to me what she was saying.
The F word, the B word.
B word and the F word.
She called them slaves. She told them that the field that they weren't on wasn't the Underground Railroad.
You guys chasing a dog around here?
Chasing a dog? What color is it?
I don't know.
What color is it?
You guys chasing a dog or trying to put a dog into a car or something?
No. They're carrying cars.
Yeah. The camera closed.
Yeah, she's saying.
I don't know why she keeps trying to
make her. She gets on. She just. She, where? The kids are just playing around here, right?
And
she came out and started talking.
And she flicked me off.
She flipped me off because this is public space.
Okay. No.
So down, call.
I'm gonna go talk to her.
She had,
you wanna yell at us?
She had. She asked.
Oh yeah.
Cause she, every time I go, I walk past, she thinks we're trying to steal her truck or buy her truck.
We're not even.
How old are you?
We're 11.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so that's another clip from The Perfect Neighbor. And these are kids who are being talked to by police officers. Gita, if you could explain the footage that you used.
Sure. So essentially, about 2 months after Ajika was murdered, we received the body camera footage, which you see in these clips. The film is about 95% police evidence. We received it from the family lawyers, Benjamin Crump and Anthony Thomas. And they asked us to go through it to see if there was anything we could use for the media. And I used to be an editor. I strung it out. And we saw, it was about 30 hours of material. And what was so astonishing about it was that it went back 2 years prior to the crime. And you never see this. In this footage, we got to see this beautiful, multiracial, intergenerational community as they were before this terrible crime occurred. And we get to see them living together, loving each other, raising kids together, kind of the best of us, the best of our society, a bit of the American dream, and how Susan, who was one outlier with a gun, used manufactured fear, weaponized racism, and had access to guns. Again, the gun laws in Florida allow you to buy a weapon, like a toaster oven or a microwave. And then also, we see how stand your ground laws came into play, and the intersection of all those things led to this terrible crime.
This is more than a decade after George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin.
Yes. Yes. And we have the precedent of that in Florida. And so for us and the family, we were deeply concerned that there would be no justice for Ajika. So Stand Your Ground exists in about 38 states in some shape, form, or fashion. And the tenets are different state by state. But in Florida, the way that the law works is that you can, as long as you are anywhere lawfully, you don't have to be in your home, but anywhere lawfully, you can use deadly force to defend yourself against a perceived threat without the duty to retreat. So imagine how biases play into that, because a threat can be perceived. So this is what exists in Florida. And again, it's an incredibly dangerous law. And there is no way that racism is not a factor.
Can you talk about the through line from your Oscar-nominated documentary short, The Devil is Busy, which we're going to talk about in a moment, to The Perfect Neighbor, and also why you chose that title, The Perfect Neighbor?
Sure. So I'll start with the title. So I believe The Perfect Neighbor holds a mirror up to our society. It speaks to all the ills that are coming mostly from the top down, frankly, that are being used to divide us and to polarize us. Again, I mentioned manufactured fear, weaponized racism. We are being told to fear our neighbors. So and that is obviously in service of our neighbors being kidnapped and, you know, perhaps trafficked into concentration camps, in my opinion. It's a way of dividing us so that we do not fight back against encroaching authoritarianism. So for me, Susan describes herself as the perfect neighbor. She says, I'm quiet. You never see me. I don't do anything. And I think there's irony in that, because the perfect neighbor, I believe, is what you see in that community of neighbors who care for each other, who are visible, who speak up, and who are in close solidarity with each other. And I think when we think about what we're going through today in our society, I want people to think about being what a perfect neighbor actually is. Is it the people in Minneapolis who are defending their neighbors, who are in the streets, who are actually risking their lives and in some cases dying? I think that might be the case. So I would like people to think about that and hopefully walk away wanting to be upstanders. And then the through line to The Devil is Busy. So that film, this short made with Soledad O'Brien, Rose Arce, and my amazing co-director, who's my best friend from college, Crystalyn Hampton, also a family film, we wanted to make a film about the fall of Roe versus Wade at the federal level, the Dobbs decision, and the impact. And this clinic in Georgia, which is run predominantly by women of color, felt like an incredible vehicle into that world. The film is representative of a day in the life. And the security guard, Tracy, who was on the front lines, is deeply religious as the men who are protesting outside, but she believes that women's reproductive freedom is still a fundamental right.
The filmmaker Geeta Gandhabir, she's made history as the first woman to receive Academy Award nominations for both Best Documentary Feature for The Perfect Neighbor and Best Documentary Short for The Devil Is Busy in the same year. To see our full interview with Geeta Gandhabir, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show remembering the acclaimed filmmaker Brent Renaud. 4 years ago this month, he became the first Western journalist killed by Russian soldiers in Ukraine. He traveled to Ukraine to film refugees for a documentary series. The Peabody Award-winning filmmaker was 50 years old. Brent was a longtime filmmaker who'd reported across the globe, including in Colombia and Mexico, Egypt, Somalia, Iraq, Libya, Haiti, China, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Much of his work done with his brother and filmmaking partner, Craig Renaud. Craig's been nominated for an Oscar for his short documentary about Brent called Armed Only with a Camera. This is the film's trailer. We're joined by the Renaud brothers, Arkansas filmmakers.
Brent, let's go.
Okay.
Let's get out of here.
When Brent told me that he wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, I followed my older brother to the most dangerous places in the world.
They're locking in on us.
We've just got some breaking news. Brent Renaud, an American photojournalist, has been killed.
Brent lost his life documenting the horrors of the battlefield in Ukraine.
The work that he was doing, the bravery with which he did it.
My name is Brent Renaud. This is my brother, Craig. Besides my brother, I struggle to make friends. Autism tells you very little about a person. I can be calm as a Zen monk in a disaster zone.
Soldiers over there.
But the cocktail party in Brooklyn was absolutely terrifying.
Brent was very intense and quiet.
He put the cameras down?
Yep. He filmed on the front line of conflicts. All around the world. But what he cared about the most were the people caught in the middle.
Describe what you see.
There are no terrorists here, only civilians.
What is your name?
My name is Brent.
The way you hold that camera, you're doing it from your heart.
The trailer for the Oscar-nominated short documentary Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, directed by Brent's brother, Craig. Craig joins us now from Austin, Texas. Craig, welcome back to Democracy Now! As we end our show on the fourth anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the fourth anniversary next week of the killing of your brother, of Brent, in Ukraine. Can you talk about this period of time? You went to Ukraine to retrieve your brother's body. Hundreds of journalists have been killed around the world since then. This documentary is not only about Brent and his incredible life and work, but really, at the end, a dedication to so many journalists who have lost their lives.
Yeah, when we first started making this film, we thought it was going to be a tribute to my brother, but it seemed like every single day that we were editing this film, another journalist would be killed. And so we felt like it had to be a bigger story about all the journalists who were being killed. Since my brother was killed, there's been over 400 journalists killed around the world, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. So, you know, we wanted this to honor all those fallen journalists.
To say the least, a bittersweet time. I mean, you did a film about the death of your brother. How hard was it for you to get into Ukraine to retrieve Brent's body? And Juan Arredondo, who was working with him, was also shot. He almost lost his life. You had to get Juan out as well. Who helped you?
It was journalists. It was Ukrainian journalists that helped us. They met me at the border, and we spent about a week and a half trying to navigate how to get Brent's body out of Ukraine and also how to get Juan out of the hospital that was being bombed. And without the Ukrainian journalists, I don't think that would have been possible to bring my brother's body home to our family.
You and your brother, you and Brent, reported on the early days of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. You embedded with the Arkansas National Guard. As you are here now, we are now in the midst of another attack, U.S. and Israel attacking Iran. It is the sixth day. You have the Secretary of Defense castigating journalists for covering the deaths of U.S. service people because he says they're trying to make the president look bad. Your thoughts?
I mean, it's one of the reasons in the film about my brother that I chose to show him after he was murdered. I chose to show him in a casket, you know, because I know that Brent believed, and I always believed, that people need to see the results and impact of the horrors of war when these wars start. So for us as journalists, it's not something that we ever shied away from. And even when my own brother was killed, my family, my mother included, felt like it was important to show Brent's body.
The film is dedicated to Brent Renaud and the many journalists who, quote, gave their lives in pursuit of truth and peace, and ends with a scene of a memoriam with attendees holding up the photographs of journalists killed globally. This is the Ukrainian journalist Mykola Davidchuk.
The війська спеціально б'ють по журналістах.
Soldiers target journalists like Brent Renaud.
Допомогти сьогодні вільному цивілізації.
Long live these heroes who gave their lives.
Since Brent's death, more than 100 journalists have been killed every year. Journalism has become one of the world's most dangerous professions.
That a clip from the end of the film, armored only with a camera, the life and death of Brent Renaud. Your final thoughts, Craig, as we move into this moment. There are, 11,000 members of the Academy of Motion Picture who will be voting on short and long documentaries, all the different films. This terrible, really, moment for you, but also trying to redeem it somehow. Your final thoughts?
I just hope that this film draws attention to the work that my brother did. You know, Brent cared about people caught in the middle of these conflicts around the world. And, you know, as we enter another war, I think about all the civilians that are going to be hurt and impacted. I think about the soldiers that are going to be killed and their families. And I hope Brent's work and the work of all the fallen journalists helps people pause for a minute and think about the impact that these wars will have.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Craig Renaud, director and producer of Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, about his brother Brent, killed 4 years ago this month in Ukraine. The film's been nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Short. Voting for the Oscars by members of the Academy ends tonight. That does it for our show. To see the full interviews we've done over the years with Craig, with Brent, with all the Oscar-nominated filmmakers, you can go to democracynow.org. On Saturday, I'll be in Savannah, Georgia, at the Hindsight Film Festival for a screening of the award-winning documentary Steal the Story, Please, about the 30 years of Democracy Now! I look forward to seeing folks in Savannah, Georgia, on Saturday night at 7. Check our website at democracynow.org for details. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamarie Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Safwat Nizal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Karl Marxer, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
For many, a career in music is a dream come true. However, the reality is that many people in the Canadian music industry do not have access to medical benefits and financial aid. This is especially true for our music industry veterans, and it's why the Unison Fund created the Slate Family Foundation Legacy Program. To learn more on how you can support legacy artists and musicians who are coping with unexpected or chronic illness, visit unisonfund.ca.